Hey, the Chaos Queen here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
All right, ready?
You sure? Why not?
Dare I say, why not?
Anything can happen.
That's right.
What do you think I am, you lying? You didn't buy those tickets today, your husband did.
What?
And last weekend at Brighton. I suppose he arranged that for us, too. Not that our little rendezvous meant very much. You so conveniently had a headache.
Ah, Roger, old boy. Now, this is a pleasant surprise. Lily, what a curious position.
You conniving panderer. You put her up to every bit of it.
There's nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm, of course, Tutu and Mike, and joining me, as always, is that good old detective, Dave Draper. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Well, how are you, sir?
Pretty good, pretty good. Today we are continuing along the journey we started last year in 2024 with the Columbo Files, and yeah, we're starting at the beginning and going all the way in order. Tubi.tv or TubiTV online is the easiest way to watch this show unless you have the DVD sets. And today is Season 2, Episode 4, and we are being stabbed by the dagger of the mind. No podcasters were stabbed in the recording of this episode.
Yet.
Well, I didn't do anything.
We'll see. Hell. See how it goes.
See how it goes. Oh, boy. All right. The Dagger of the Mind. Sir Roger Haversham, played by John Williams. No, not that John Williams.
No, not that John Williams.
Yeah. I think, isn't this his, this is the second time? I don't remember.
Because I remember the name came up.
Yeah.
So it must have.
Yeah, must have. I'll have to look at that in a second. Realizes that actors Nicholas Frame, played by Richard Basehart, and his wife Lillian Stanhope, played by Honor Blackman, have manipulated him into backing their theater production.
Okay, actually, first, reopening his theater, because he mentions that the theater had been closed.
Closed, yep. So I can tie Columbo, Knight Rider, and James Bond together in this one episode.
You know, this is going to be a hard one, like, to be a good boy. Because Honor Blackman.
Uh-huh. Pussy galore.
Pussy galore. Pusher. that is how I do the Sean Connery voices. I always start by saying pusher. That's just going to be naughty. But yeah, she which sadly she's a real actress and she's a good actress and
she's a great actress. She was.
She's a pusher. I'm a child. But yeah, there are a couple, and Richard Basehart, I kind of know, weirdly, I know him from MST3K because Gypsy had like a crush on him or something. She was always, he was her favorite actor. She'd always mention him. So it's just, and he does a, it's funny because, you know, obviously he's an actor playing an actor.
Yeah.
And he's a real sort of, there is this nicely egotistical jackassery to his performance.
Oh, yes, very much.
Which shines through, like, every time, like, they, because there's this whole minor, it's not really a subplot, but it's sort of a thing about this other, this folio he has of, not folio, but like a copy of, another copy of Macbeth that was owned by another great actor. And you know, they're like, oh, he was England's greatest actor. And he'll go, one of England's greatest actors. He'll always kind of like get these little, and they're not digs, but they're like little, they're like the reverse of digs. They're little self-promoting asides when people talk about stuff. Which is neat. And then, you know, she, I'm spinning out of control. Help me.
Yeah. Richard Basehart is just amazing. He... his acting, like, this is what was crazy to me. So I saw him in his later stages in life, because when he was Wilton Knight in Knight Rider and Knight of the Phoenix, the openings, the pilot episode for Knight Rider, he wasn't so old, but he was older, obviously, than what he is here, because that was in 1982. This is in whatever.
73, I believe.
73, yes.
Or probably 72.
72, November 26th, 72. So I had seen him briefly in that because he's only in like the first, but like his voice for narration when he got old, oh my God, it's so good. Absolutely loved it. 100%.
One man can make a difference, Mike. Michael Knight, a lone crusader in a dangerous world, the world of the Knight Rider.
Just, and in this, just shows, like, this role shows how good of an actor he is. He was Ishmael in Moby Dick in 56. Oh my God, I did not know that.
I'm sure he had, like, a hell of a career.
Oh yeah, a hell of a career. Between TV and film, he was in an episode of Rawhide. He was in Alfred Hitchcock Hour. He was in Route 66.
Who wasn't, apparently?
Okay, well.
No, Alfred Hitchcock is going to keep coming up.
Yep. Well, it's going to keep coming up because another one of our podcasts on the network, Cinema Geeks, I think they're doing an Alfred Hitchcock Presents series on their podcast discussing the Alfred Hitchcock stuff. So we're doing Columbo, they're doing Hitchcock. But yeah, no. Yeah, Knight Rider was literally the last thing, one of the last things that he had done in TV. But no, this episode was just great. Again, I mentioned last episode, I'll say it in more detail here. What I noticed about this episode more than any other episode so far is Columbo's little tics and the way Peter Falk plays the character, the way the character acts in certain scenes. Like, he pulled the curtain thing, not realizing that the curtain is going to call the butler.
And he looks
the little rope. And then he looks into the liquor cabinet and this, that, and the other thing and everything else.
My take on that was he thought that he would hear the bell. Like, he pulls the rope, and then it's not a rope. It is like a little... It's not a curtain and it's not a rope. It's a little sash thing hanging from the wall. Pull it and it rings a bell somewhere else in the house for the butler to come. And he pulls it. It kind of like looks like he's expecting a sound. And then he's like, okay, well, that's nothing. And then the butler played by Hyde White. He was in a lot of stuff too. Like I know he was in the second season of Buck Rogers, among other things.
Yep.
The very Englishy English guy in a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about this episode is that this is one of several to feature locations outside of the U.S., but it was filmed both in Los Angeles and Hollywood, although scenes with Wilfred Hyde White were set in London due to the actor's tax problems. All his character's scenes were filmed in California.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because there's like a lot of, like, there are shots of Columbo running around mm-hmm. Buckingham Palace and the streets of, I wasn't surprised that they split the filming, but like, I'm surprised that most of it was filmed in California.
Well, no.
Wilfred
Hyde White's scenes.
No, I get that. But like what I'm saying is I'm surprised. Oh, wait. Oh, his scenes were filmed in California.
His scene due to his tax problems, all his characters.
Were filmed in California. Yeah.
So that the rest makes of
more
it.
Sense. Because they give a thanks to the people of London mm-hmm. in the credits or something. They give a thanks to England or London.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And this one is just,
it's peak Columbo.
It's peak Columbo.
In fact, it's almost a little more Columbo than like, you know, because I mentioned in the last episode that like the question of whether Columbo was sort of doing it as an act. Yep. And in this one, he is like from the moment you see him, he is full on. He is like, there's this great sequence at Heathrow, I think, or it's London Airport.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, like, the whole thing is they're trying to find this great American detective. And meanwhile, it's like a Scooby-Doo thing. He's constantly wandering around. Yeah. He's trying to find his lost luggage. And somehow they manage to turn around just when he walks past. And he's getting into all this trouble. And it's just, you know, because he just wants his suitcase. And he mistakes a suitcase for his suitcase. And he opens that up and stuff falls everywhere. And they're all, like, they're all clueless that this weird little guy mm-hmm. is who they're all looking for. It's great. Yeah.
It was so fun. It's definitely peak Columbo. And that's why I took so many screenshots of Peter Falk as the character, of catching various, like, looks of his, because it literally is. The dog's not there, the car isn't there, no. But as far as seeing... Yeah, I was going to mention
his mannerisms, that, his behavior.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I noticed more than any other... Normally, I don't notice this stuff, but I mean, it is what it is. Obviously, for most people that should know, the rule in most police stations for homicide detectives, you will wear a suit and tie. That's the quote-unquote uniform for a homicide detective.
Well, he has a jacket and he has a tie.
I'm not complaining. I'm saying that to give people listening a pretense for it. My point is, though, up until this episode, I never really looked at the rest of his outfit. It's the coat and it's the shoes.
Yeah.
That's all we ever really kind of like.
Okay. I have in the past noticed, you know, what he was, he has, like, his suit has this weird faded quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
He has, like, a yellow shirt. Like, I think it's supposed to be a yellow shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed. Well, there's an episode, I don't know if you've gotten there, where he actually is forced to, he gets a new coat.
Okay.
Have you seen that one? He does not like the new coat. He never wears it. And surprise, he gets the old coat back by the end of the episode. Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you do get to see him in his jacket, his non trench coat outfit a lot in that episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be fun to see. But yeah, no. And again, my point in bringing that up is that I never, like, I just, you know, assume he's wearing a suit and tie. But the main parts of the character of Columbo is the cigar, the coat, and the shoes, as far as the physical character. And it was nice to me to see. It was nice that I could notice all of that with his suit and his tie and everything else in this episode. Again, this episode to me is a very Columbo-heavy episode with the cameras and how they filmed this, because he's in a completely different setting. He's not in Los Angeles. He's in London. He's supposed to be learning from New Scotland Yard and everything. Look, it's
no. I'm laughing not at you. I'm laughing at the fact he's supposed to be there to learn. I think he's supposed to teach them, isn't he? It's like an exchange.
Yeah, but
he's spending all his time running. He constantly jumps out of the car and does touristy things. When people aren't paying attention for 2 seconds.
Yeah, the synopsis says he's visiting London to study British police techniques as the guest of Scotland Yard Detective Chief Superintendent William Dirk, played by Bernard Ferks, who is called to investigate the incident and all that.
Yeah, I guess we should sort of explain. We set up a little bit that Havisham, is that the name?
I think so.
The victim, like, what happens is he's going to shut everything down the night before the play premieres, and the irony is the play is Macbeth, because, for those of you who don't know, Macbeth is infamous for being cursed, and actors are not supposed to refer to it by name. They call it the Scottish play.
Yes.
So it's kind of a joke that the production of Macbeth is cursed, and he shows up. He kind of sneaks in, which is important to the plot, and tells them he's going to shut everything down. He realizes he's been played by Honor Blackman and
Richard Basehart.
Richard Basehart, and they get in a scuffle, and she throws like an ashtray or something.
Heavy
enough to like crack a skull. And it was so. Ironically, it was an accident.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, she didn't intend to kill him. So they sneak his body back to the house, to his house, to his manor house, and make it look like he fell down the steps.
Yep.
And he is like a distant cousin of Inspector Dirk's wife. Dirk has to like call on the household when he's got Columbo in tow. And of course, Columbo goes full Columbo the minute he smells something's going on. He starts asking questions, causing trouble. I think part of the setup is that they leave a copy, a first edition of Alice in Wonderland, sitting open on a table, like face down.
Yeah.
And Columbo's like, isn't that book expensive? And it's like, yes, it's actually very expensive. It's very rare. He's like, but isn't that going to like crack the spine? Why would you ever do that to an expensive book like that? And that's kind of what gets him going about like asking questions and gets and then Dirk kind of is very support, like supportive isn't the right word, but I mean he goes along with it. Like he thinks they're smart questions and he starts asking them himself.
Yep. Yeah, this one very theatrical because obviously it's about Macbeth and Shakespeare.
Well, it's set in a theater,
Right. Well, so the
I'm laughing with, not at. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Calm down.
I don't know. I'm good.
You'll know when I'm mocking you.
Yeah. I know. I trust me. I know.
Knock.
Again, the my wife counter is just off the chain. Like he my wife and the English butler. My wife and I never agree on arguments. The butler did it.
There's a brother-in-law too. Because I love that he borrowed his brother-in-law's camera and he takes all these pictures of a parade out in front of Buckingham. And he gets in the car and he's like, "Jay, I hope I loaded the film right."
Yeah, I like Columbo.
I love it. It's so Columbo.
It is so very Columbo.
Actually, my favorite moment of the entire episode. It's a real subtle thing. It's kind of later in the episode than I thought it was. Is they're walking around outside and Big Ben starts to chime.
Yep.
And Columbo looks at his watch. He's like, "How about that? A clock that old, and it's only a minute off." And Dirk just goes, "We must put another penny on the governor." Like, really kind of like crisp. Like, oh, I'm so glad you've shown us that our iconic thing doesn't match your cheap little American watch. Must put another penny on the governor.
Yeah, absolutely. But Basehart as Nicholas Frame. Oh my God.
Really great.
It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signified.
So we talked about last season, in season one, when we talked about Roger.
Yeah.
In that episode.
I think Roger was Haversham, so.
I don't remember.
There was a Haversham somewhere.
Yeah. But Nicholas, to me, at the end of this, when he goes crazy and just starts acting again, literally reminded me of Roger from the other episode on the ski lift when he goes nuts, because that's kind of what Nicholas does here. He just starts going back into Macbeth and just starts quoting and this, that, and the other thing, trying to distract.
Well, again, the thing about Macbeth is, you know the story of Macbeth. Honestly, the whole thing is he murders his king to become king, and then he goes crazy.
Yep.
So it's like the irony is the actor who played a guy descending into madness then descends into madness.
Yes. Yes.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. This is also one of those, like, it's kind of a good thing. I don't know. This is one of those where, like, I always talk about, like, Columbo's somewhat questionable methods sometimes of getting a confession. And this is right up there. He literally admits he planted evidence at the end. Like, Dirk is like off the record. Like that you, he's like, oh, there, because the whole thing is during the fight, one of her, not a pearl neck, a fake pearl necklace breaks all over the place.
Yep.
And there are beads everywhere. And there's this whole thing about the guy's umbrella, because it's a very sentiment. It was given to him by Lady Astor.
Yeah,
so they got to swap the umbrella back and forth, and that's really how Columbo kind of gets his focus in on the on Basehart and Honor Blackman.
Yeah,
but like at the end at the London Wax Museum, and I need to look that up because I mean I've always heard it was just Toussaint's Wax Museum, so I don't know if they went generic or if they just changed the name at some point.
Hmm.
But anyway, there's an exhibit of them and the victim, and he's got his umbrella. And so Columbo's talking about how during there are all these little beads everywhere. One of them might have gotten into the umbrella. Mm-hmm. And they open up the umbrella, and there's a bead. And they're all like, "No, he put it there." And the guy who runs the museum's like, "No, no one touched that umbrella but me. I'll testify to that."
Yeah.
And at the very end, he admits that he like had learned as a little kid to get the attention of a girl he likes to like flick things when nobody's looking.
That's right. He flicks
it right into like a little cup, and it's like, dude. You planted that evidence. Like in America, we got like constitution and laws and rules and stuff.
Yeah.
We're in a godless monarchy.
We're going to ignore the godless monarchy line, but.
Come on, it's not the only countries we're allowed to hate anymore. Robble, robble, robble.
Oh, boy.
Not in Canada.
We need walls on all sides, folks.
We do.
No, we don't.
You're joking, but no, we do.
No, no we don't.
We need walls between the states.
Oh, we need Lord.
Walls within walls. We need walls to protect us from the walls.
The United States, folks, is just one giant Russian nesting doll.
Yes. It's a giant maze.
That's right. It's a melting pot. Everybody can be here, and everyone is okay to be here. So, yeah, the planting of the evidence thing, I don't want to believe it, but I guess it did happen. But he you are 100. I know it. I know he does. But I'm just like, oh, come on. It's kind of like how we don't want, like we were mentioning last time about his drinking. He's a police officer. Police officers don't drink on duty. They don't. When you're on duty, you're not supposed to do things that you would maybe do off duty. If you're working, if you are a police officer, you don't do certain things when you're working. And it doesn't make me dislike the character. It just makes me think that, like you said, he would have never gotten away with that.
It is like a step up in the last season. There was the one I think with Robert Culp with the potato in the tailpipe.
Yep.
This is like the evolution of that almost. Yeah,
a little bit.
But I mean, you know, the she confesses.
Yeah,
he goes crazy, but she confesses to, and you know, and well, okay, we skipped the part about Wilford Hyde White. Like, yes. They end up flat out murdering him.
Yeah,
but
murder him because he blackmails them.
Yeah, because he blackmails them because he figures out what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but like you're not allowed to you're not allowed to murder people just because they blackmail you. Like you go to the police, which you can't do because he's blackmailing them about murder. But like, you don't just go ahead and murder somebody. Like that's never like what I'm saying is up to a certain point, which I think they crossed pretty early on. But up to a certain point, they could have It was an accident.
It was an accident.
Accident is because there was a fight and she threw a thing and she thought she was throwing it at him at Richard Basehart.
Yeah, and he ducked out of the way.
Yeah, so like there was a little sympathy there, but I think their subsequent actions kind of get them dug in deeper and deeper and deeper, up to the point of murdering a guy, and framing him for the original death. But what I'm saying is, like, she does confess to, like, the fact that, it was an accident,
Absolutely.
I think it was you.
No, I absolutely love, I really dug this one. I think, I like the last episode, and I like this one, too, but I like this one more than that one.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Also, but I'm also a big Anglophile, so I love English-set things. So, like, I like the little stagehand guy who's at the pub.
Yep.
And then Columbo tries to approach him and he's all like, "Don't touch me. I got my shrapnel in my trotters I can't remember. An Alamine."
Yeah.
I can't remember the general's name, but a famous English general at Alamine. Yeah, I really this is probably the most fun episode I've had so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think almost like, you know, we talked about how there was no dog, there was no car. I mean, there's always gonna be a cigar in the coat.
Yep.
But like it's almost like freed from everything else, Columbo got to be more Columbo. Like he was kind of like without all the like natural things kind of keeping him almost in check, he just kind of went wild.
Yeah.
Which was fun. Also, like I really noticed this time, more so than I ever have, because you kind of notice that Columbo does a Groucho Marx walk. Where he's kind of
he does.
For you kids today, a Naruto walk. Because he's kind of bent over and he's walking. But there's a scene where you kind of realize there's a shot with him and Richard Basehart where you realize he's a lot taller than you think he is.
Yeah.
Like if you know, and even then he was kind of like hunched over a little bit. His neck was kind of stuck at an angle.
Yeah.
But like he's always kind of holding himself much lower and smaller than he really is.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think we've talked about this. But Peter was 5 foot something.
Hmm. Well, I remember there's a line in a later episode where he goes, "I don't even like being this tall."
Yeah.
Well, in the early 70s, 5 foot something.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing to sleaze at. Sleaze at?
Sleaze? Wow.
Me, dude. English good speak. Me, English.
English good speak. Oh, boy. Anything else with Dagger of the Mind?
No, I think this is a really super fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. 0 to 5, what are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
I am actually going to give it a 5. I really dug it. I thought it was great. I thought it was super fun. I thought it was interesting. Again, you're kind of going back to the beginnings of Columbo with the acting of the prescription murder. This is not prescription murder. This is not, but the, like we mentioned in the beginning of the doing the series, the Columbo Files here in Inside Studio 2009, how it was more of a play. And because this is acting, theater, play things, and it's Shakespeare and all that, just, yeah, absolutely loved it. Peter was 5'6" in life.
Yeah, I just looked that up myself. It's, you know, back in the day, that's not that bad.
It's nothing to sneeze at. All right, 4.5 for Dave, 5 for me. We're going to go to a quick podcast ad break and hear some podcast ads and some other stuff. We'll come back to close the show right after this.
Gee, I hope I put the film in right.
Do you know John Hiatt songs?
Maybe you know them from being covered by Roseanne Cash, Three Dog Night, the Neville Brothers, Emmylou Harris, Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Jeff Healey, Bonnie Raitt, or literally hundreds of others.
Maybe you have some of his albums on your shelf or in your cowhorned Cadillac right now.
I'm Jesse Jackson.
And I'm Sylvan Groff.
And we're going to dive in from A to Z. Join us on the Perfectly Good Podcast.
We're going to discuss all of your favorites and uncover some forgotten gems, from Aces Up Your Sleeve to Zero House.
Rate and debate every John Hiatt song on the Perfectly Good Podcast. Have a little faith. For over 6 years, my guest and I have been discussing the soundtracks to our lives. I'm Jesse Jackson, and I've had hundreds of fans from around the world share their stories about the power and magic of all kinds of music. If you enjoy stories about joy, redemption, trials, and ultimately triumph, then please check out Set Listing Bruce, a Bruce Springsteen fan podcast. Remember, there is magic in the night.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes or geekcastradio.com.
For the best in science fiction, join Mark Baumgarten, Vicky Jakubowski, Zion Kiros, and Juan San Miguel on the award-winning podcast Marku 42's Universe. Doctor Who, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Trek, and more are all fair game with Marku 42. Which has been around since 2012 in one form or another. Marku 42's Universe is proud to be a part of GeekCast Radio Network, the best place to get your geek on. Listen to us bi-weekly or weekly if we have a topic relevant for you, our listeners. Marku 42 on GeekCast Radio Network, a match made in a galaxy near you.
Are you missing entertainment in your life? Welcome to Captain Ruggles Gaming. Whether it's guides, roleplay content, or our shenanigans with our collaborations with the 20 years standing strong Fart Clan, also known as Fast Action Response Team, or the Wrecking Crew, we have something for everyone. So join us when we traverse the cosmos of space games, survive the undead in zombie games, or just having fun in first-person shooters or random indie games. visit us now at GeekCastRadio.com and YouTube.com/@CaptainRuggles or Google search Captain Ruggles Gaming. It's game time, and I'll see you out on the battlefield.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Would have been a time for such a word. Tomorrow, tomorrow, and tomorrow.
It is a meal you shall wish to enjoy tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow.
All right, folks, you're in the 9 days of the Columbo Files, so 9 straight days, Columbo episodes here inside Studio 2009. This is day 4, episode 134 of the podcast. Any final thoughts about the Dagger of the Mind, sir?
No, I thought it was a great episode. It's a lot of fun. Richard Basehart was 5'9", so.
Very cool, very cool. Absolutely, absolutely. And somewhere in here, folks, whether it's at the end of the podcast or whether you already heard it, I am definitely putting in Knight Rider clips of Richard Basehart because that's just how I roll. So there's that. Thank you for joining us here inside the studio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can also check out shop.geekcastradio.com and buy our stuff. Get our merch. We got mugs and t-shirts and mouse pads and gaming pads and all kinds of other stuff. Steve Megatron's been doing an awesome job stocking up the store on various things. You can send email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on any of the podcatching clients you choose to use, such as Apple or Spotify, etc. We're also on YouTube, so we're on the GCR on YouTube channel as well. You can follow us on social media with Twitter @GeekCastRadio for the network, @ItStudio2009 for the show. I am @TFG1Mike. Dave is not on social media.
No.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadio Network and check out Studio 2009 podcast over there as well. Join us next time when Dave and I will be talking about Season 2, Episode 5, Requiem for a Star.
Requiem for a Falling Star.
Yeah. It's a falling star. That's what it is.
This is the one where I think the killer gets away.
Ooh. For now, I am TFG and Mike with...
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
And tomorrow. Hillary is back in the studio soon.
Excuse me. Irish whiskey before luncheon. I would have thought perhaps that a glass of sherry and iced amontillado would have been more appropriate.
Oh, no, sir, no. Thank you very much. I really wasn't looking for a drink. No, I was just wondering. I wonder, could you tell me, do you know whether or not Mr. The gentleman, Sir Havisham, was that the chair that he was reading in last night?
Well, as a matter of fact, that was Sir Roger's favorite chair when he wanted to read, yes.
Oh, I see. Terrible thing, wasn't it?
Yes, very shocking. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Why do you suppose he started downstairs?
No idea.
Oh. Couldn't have been to get any liquor. Certainly plenty of stuff up here.
Well, sir, it's not for me to question my master's wishes. As a matter of fact, he sometimes preferred to have a cup of cocoa as a nightcap from the kitchen.
You work here?
Indeed I do. I've been here for many happy years.
I thought you were a friend of the family.
Thank you very much. And you, I take it, are the gentleman who rang the bell just now.
Well, that works.
Indeed it does.
Gee, I thought it was just decoration. Boy, that's funny, isn't it?
What's funny?
No, I was just wondering if he wanted something last night, why he didn't just ring for it?
Well, if I may say so, unlike many masters, Sir Roger was very considerate to his staff. Perhaps you'll be good enough to excuse me.
Oh, certainly, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hold you up. I just get curious about these things. I guess nobody heard anything when he fell downstairs.
Well, that's understandable. You see, cook's quarters are in the south wing, and the maids also sleep there. I live in the old cottage. And so happens that Roger dismissed us early last night. I should say not later than 7 o'clock.
But I was wondering, if that's...
Ah,
Tanner's been the butler here for over 20 years, Columbo.